In this first episode, we give you the story about how European Energy was established, told by the founders of the company. We take you back to Knud Erik Andersen's childhood, youth and undergraduate days to explore which values the company is built upon. Episode 1. How it all started.
Erik Andersen, co-founder, CEO, European Energy. I'm married, have 3 kids, living in Lyngby, close to Copenhagen in Denmark. Yeah.
Knud Erik Andersen, or just Erik as he prefers, is co-founder and current CEO of European Energy, a multi-billion dollar company that, with wind, solar and power-to-x projects, is contributing to the vital green transition that the world urgently needs. On a freezing cold, beautiful winter morning, he opens his front door, welcoming us to his house in Lyngby, near Copenhagen, where he lives with his family. This is the story of European Energy, and it begins with a young man from Rødby, a small town in southern Denmark. Already as an 18-year-old, he envisioned making Europe energy independent, and all the way through his career, this has been his focus. Erik serves tea in the cozy ground floor living room with a view to snow-covered branches in the garden outside. And he begins by recounting his youth and the values he was brought up on.
Traditional family values, traditional liberal farmer values, I will call it.
He was raised on a small farm on the island of Lolland, and from an early age, he was keen on all kinds of sports.
Football, handball, table tennis, or whatever it's called. So always been keen on winning, and I think to some extent this has been brought into the business atmosphere as well, that it's very, very nice to participate, but you need to win.
This was in the early 1970s, when the global oil shock caused an energy crisis that had a profound impact on the 18-year-old Erik.
We had, at that point in time, a small energy crisis here in Europe, also in Denmark. So we were not allowed to drive with our cars on Sundays, simply to save fuel, to save energy.
The Danes felt these consequences severely. Not only was driving a car banned on Sundays, but people also had to minimize their heating and electricity usage to an extent never before experienced in Denmark.
This energy crisis led or triggered in me the interest for the energy business to the headline that Europe, Denmark should be independent. We will consume energy as a part of our lifestyle. That's what we do every day. But by doing that, we also have the obligation to generate energy. So we should make our own energy for the consumption that we would like to have as a part of our lifestyle. So that was the very, very first trigger, and back in the 70s.
Erik knew he wanted to contribute to his country's quest for energy independence. In 1979, at the age of 19, he began his electrical engineering studies at the Danish Technical University.
So I moved from my hometown to Copenhagen.
He was excited by the concept of free green energy offered by wind turbines.
DTU, or Danish Technical University, at that time was, and I also think today, an extremely flexible institution, where you have a catalog of courses, more than 600 individual courses that you can select as a student. And I just took this catalog and said, okay, I want to become an energy engineer.
But at that time, there was no educational path to become an energy engineer. That all came later.
Today, you can even become a wind energy engineer at the Danish Technical University. But at that time, it was not invented. So what we did, myself and some fellow students, was that we sat down and said, okay, we want to define our own program. And You can do your own program if you just can find a responsible professor who will be your tutor or your actually make courses for you. And we found actually at the university professors who liked the idea about energy and how could we make renewable energy in Denmark, especially from the wind. So we defined our own courses.
During a summer break, Eric and a bunch of other ambitious students decided to build their own wind turbine from scratch. They took the train back to Eric's childhood home in Lolland, utilizing the space and the tools in the farm's machine shop.
There was a shop inside to repair machinery and all that, and the turbine was not made out of standard parts. We have actually, the gearbox was actually a gearbox from an old truck. That was the beginning of the construction of a turbine with a capacity of 11 kilowatt, which at that time was a decent size for a turbine. And that was actually built of these six students.
They had a great summer building this 11 kilowatt turbine, both having fun and at the same time nerding out on wind profile theory.
You have a lot of different profiles, aerodynamic profiles, and we selected carefully a profile which we thought at that time would be the ideal profile for a wind turbine in Denmark. That was a fantastic summer. 25, 30 degrees, and then in the end, in the autumn, we were done and we could put up this first prototype and see it spinning, seeing that we could actually generate power out of the wind.
Eric sits with his feet on the chair next to him. He's surrounded by books, iPads, green plants, and children's drawings. Countless notifications continuously ping from his laptop. Two cats parade through the room with indifference. Eric has lived here since the mid-1980s, when he was given the opportunity to move into the house, which at that time functioned as a commune. The kitchen where Eric makes his coffee still stands as he built it then, with white tiles and brown wooden cabinets. Eric and his student team were proud of their 11 kilowatt machine, but now they wanted to build a wind turbine they could sell.
Now we want to make a real turbine from standard parts which we can make a serial production and all that, and then we would like to make it bigger, so we scale up to 22 kilowatt. So that was the following year we made this 22 kilowatt machine. The problem there was then when you make it out of standard parts, you need to have a budget. We have a budget of 120,000 Danish crowns.
120,000 kroners was a lot of money for Eric and his friends, so they had to be creative.
We made actually a small picture of a model, scale model. So we made a model 30 centimeters high, and then we made a little bit of background material, and then we took a picture, and then we put it in to the local newspaper, turbine for sale. And a farmer was calling us and said, "Whoa, I have seen your turbine, can I buy one?" I said, "Yes, of course you can. Okay, when can you deliver?" He said, "Well, in 6 months' time you can have it." And then we signed a contract, and he paid 120,000 for a turbine, which was, it was not even a prototype at that point in time. Then we had the capital to go out and buy the gearboxes, the generators, and the steel parts and whatever that we needed. And then we actually produced a 22 kilowatt machine, put up at his farm, and then we were in business, so to say.
In the beginning of the 1980s, Eric established a company named Centic, and he enlisted Michael Dystrup Pedersen, who would later become both co-founder and CTO of European Energy.
My name is Michael Pedersen. Originally, I was a chief technical officer, now vice president, head of chief engineers.
In 1988, just as he was finishing his education, Michael got a tip that would prove to have a decisive impact on his future.
One of my teachers approached me and stated that he knew a small company which actually was looking for someone who could make some programming for wind turbines.
And after a short interview with Eric, he was hired.
So there was no year of relaxing or any kind of holidays. It was just out into the business. And my first job was to make a remote program in DOS, which retrieved information from wind turbines so they could see if a turbine was standing still and why.
Michael remembers his first impression of Eric and the atmosphere in the small startup.
It was really entrepreneur attitude. He had a lot of ideas and was just going ahead. We should go out and conquer the world.
That was then the beginning of the first company. We leave the heavy stuff and go to the more intelligent part of a wind turbine. We simply make control panels and software for the industry as a subcontractor.
Unlike Michael, Eric was still enrolled as a DTU student, but the principal was getting impatient. The university sent him a letter that said,
"You have been a student at DTU now for 10 years. You are still missing one course, 6 points, which is you collect around 330 out of these 330. I was still lagging 6 points, so that was not. So either you do your 6 points or you're kicked out." So I made my last 6 points and actually became, after 10 years, a civil engineer officially. And that must have been in the late 80s.
A couple of years later, in 1995, Eric and Michael established a new company named Insight Technology that specialized in embedded computing.
I formed a company called Insight Technology together with Knud-Erik, and the focus on Insight Technology was to make small computer boards to fit into the industry. It might be scanners, it might be copy machines, CNC machines, or something like that.
We tried to squeeze it down to a credit card size, because then you can embed a PC in a lot of other equipment. That was, let's say, the next invention that we worked on. And that actually, that new idea very rapidly took off. I mean, suddenly we saw that that new embedded computing was actually growing much faster than the control panels for the wind turbines.
Insight Technology experienced tremendous success, quickly achieving $15 million in revenue with sales in 15 countries. Then, in the year 2000, 50% of Insight Technology was sold to a German competitor, which a few years later also bought the remaining half. And Eric walked away with 4 million euros. He could have lived comfortably off the profits. But for Eric, this was just the beginning of his entrepreneurial journey. However, he did take a 6-month break after fathering his first child.
And I'm focused a little bit on the family and refurbishing our home and expanding our home a little bit. And then, of course, we had the first child. So that was my family period, I will call it, those 6 months. Then we made a quick brainstorm, what's the next we're going to do? And then we actually also have then a little bit of capital base for establishing European Energy.
As co-founders, Eric and Michael used their earnings from the sale of Insight Technology to establish a new company called European Energy Systems.
But then we found out that the name European Energy was free for use, and we said, why not? And then actually we got back to the original formula. The European lifestyle requires energy. Europe needs to generate its own energy for the people. And therefore the circle was actually still there, that we should simply make energy.
The main focus was still to make Europe energy independent, and there was finally an opening in the market for green energy.
Slowly, also the climate agenda came in. So actually there were two driving forces, independency and climate. And with that, we said, okay, this is the basis for our activities.
We started in Germany, and I was together with a colleague going to Germany two or three times a week to talk to developer, talk to wind turbine manufacturers, banks, and notaries, of course. So in a couple of years, we actually erected some 10, 15 turbines in Germany from the really beginning with only two, three persons.
And then from Germany, we moved on. We moved to Poland, we moved to Italy. We established the company formally in 2004, I think. And then in 2006, we had our first Italian wind farm established in Tuscany.
Up to this point, the small team was working at Eric's house. When they had to establish a new office, it was important that the commuting time wasn't too long.
Because I still have small kids and all that, so my wife said, okay, find this external office, but I will not accept that you use more than 5 minutes on transportation.
The first real office was placed inside an incubator center within the Technical University.
It's only 5 minutes by bicycle from here, so that was the perfect office for us. So that was a good combination in the beginning.
They had this facility where small companies could be located, and they have reception, they have a canteen, and they also have a fax machine, which is crucial for doing a business in Germany, and still is. And we were there a long period of time before we actually moved to this location. But at that point in time, we did not imagine that we would be 600, 800, 25 years ahead. It's been quite a journey.
Yes, it has been quite a journey. From a handful of people in a tiny startup to a global company with hundreds of employees. Today, more than a decade later, the headquarters of European Energy is situated in Søborg, just outside Copenhagen. Still only 5 minutes from Eric's home. This was the first episode. In the next one, we will get to know some of the new employees who joined the rapidly growing but still young company. And Deputy CEO Jens Peter Sink recounts the financial crisis when European Energy was struggling to survive.